Good afternoon and welcome to Tuesday Talks at the White House, a weekly invitation for people around the country to get online and engage with policy experts and administration officials. Today we're so pleased to have with us Energy Secretary Stephen Chu. Thank you so much for being here.
Sure, it's a pleasure to be here, and to all of you out there, also a pleasure to have you listening in. Very briefly, what I think is facing the world and the United States in this energy and climate challenge is one of the most compelling issues that needs to be solved. It needs to be solved by government action, but it also needs to be solved by science, technology, innovation. And it's something that will create jobs, wealth in countries that embrace it, and for that reason, virtually all of Western Europe, Japan, Korea, China, other countries want to move in this direction to develop those technologies that can enable its people to use energy more efficiently, enable it to create cleaner forms of energy. And you see, they see a huge growing market for these products and for these innovations. And I think the challenge is whether the United States, which has the greatest innovation machine in the world, want to rise to the challenge and create new wealth and prosperity for our citizens.
Thanks. Yesterday, Secretary Chu delivered a speech at the National Press Club in D.C. If you haven't seen it, you can check it out at energy.gov, or we link to it on whitehouse.gov, basically calling on the United States to sharply accelerate innovations in clean energy. And today, we're so grateful that you're here answering your questions. So for the past couple of days, we've been you've been sending us your questions on whitehouse.gov and Facebook. We've gotten hundreds of questions so far, and there's also a live chat that's happening right now that we encourage you to join. Go to whitehouse.gov/live. There's a link to join the live discussion, and we're going to answer as many of your questions as we can today. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Secretary Chu. If you want to say a few words, or we'll just hop right into questions.
I just wanted to make one announcement that the DOE is announcing nearly $21 million in providing technical assistance to projects to help people improve the energy use in commercial buildings. And we think this is going to go a long way to helping people save money by saving energy. And we're very enthusiastic about this, and we want to socialize and get the message out that saving energy does mean saving money, and it does mean that more money in your pocket that goes back into the economy.
Great, thanks. So with that, we're going to jump right into your questions. The first one comes from Sheila Molina from Kissimmee, Florida. And her question, and I think you can speak to it as one that very much leads by example in this area: how can we, the people, save more energy at home?
Well, there's a number of things. The first thing is something probably your parents told you when you were little. You know, if you're not using the lights, turn them off. If you leave the room, turn them off. Just simple habits like that. But going beyond that, if you think about does your home have the right amount of insulation? Do you have leaky doors and windows? Just sealing the leaky air spaces and making sure you have the right amount of insulation goes a long way to saving lots of energy and saving money. Just as a very quick anecdote, when my wife and I move into houses, typically the first thing we do is look at those things. And on average, we've been able to cut the energy bills from the previous owner in half.
Great. This next question comes from Nicole on Facebook. Building a clean energy economy is the best idea I've heard in a long time. How does President Obama plan to implement a strategy to teach our youth about the inner workings of a green-powered economy?
Well, it's first, that's exactly what we should be doing. We should be looking to the youth. They're quick to learn things, they're quick to adapt and to realize the importance and the opportunity. And so I think we're doing many things. For example, we're going to be rolling out a number of things that actually help high school, junior high school, grade school children, as well as college students, learn more about the energy issues, how they can save money by saving energy, all of those things. It is a great opportunity. And finally, it's not a great opportunity to save money, but it's also a great opportunity to create jobs across a wide spectrum of the U.S. As we transition to a much more sustainable energy economy, to a much more efficient economy, which would make us competitive in the future. But, and that demand of retrofitting homes, retrofitting buildings, of creating cleaner sources of energy, more efficient sources of energy, all of those things is a demand that would create jobs and productivity and increase the productivity in the U.S.
Great. Thank you. The next question comes from Laura Cunningham on Facebook. Laura asks, Dr. Chu, is the Department of Energy working on ways to integrate new solar technology into urban environments to increase the impact of distributed generation? Are we looking at the German model? Thank you.
Well, we're doing several things. First, what we're trying to do is look at ways to greatly decrease the cost of solar panels and solar electricity. And in addition to encouraging people to use them, I think the biggest encouragement ultimately will be, can you drop the cost by a factor of four? And if you drop the cost by a factor of four, what we feel will happen is that all over the world, and in the United States included, you begin to think of putting up solar panels everywhere because it just makes better sense. It's just more economical. And so we have a very active program. What do we need to do in order to get to that factor four? Can it be done in 6 years? Can it be done in 8 years? Something of that time scale. In addition to that, there are subsidies in states that enable this, but it's getting the cost down, and then finally, it's getting energy storage to work as well, because not only do you want to, electricity is very funny. You generate it, you use it, or you lose it. And so the distributed storage also will require energy storage, and we're working hard on developing new technologies for energy storage.
Thanks. If you're just joining us, go to whitehouse.gov/live. There's a very active chat happening right now on Facebook. You can click the link to join the chat. We're getting a lot of good questions. This one just came in from Cookie Capiza. Cookie asks, why aren't we discovering other ways to fuel cars?
Well, we are. There's several things we have to do. First, we're working very hard on electrifying personal vehicles. When you electrify personal vehicles, these are vehicles that can be driven with, cars that can be driven 100 to 200, up to 400 or 500 miles by charging with electricity. That means you're open to many, many sources of energy and ultimately renewable energy that will be used to charge the car's batteries. So that's one part. The other part is while we have an active program in biofuels based on corn, that's a good start, but we are also now looking to improve that further, developing new technologies, new plants that could create more wealth in rural America and that could create better fuels that make more sense, that could be direct substitutes for gasoline, diesel fuel, and jet fuel. So we have an active program going on. There are very hopeful signs in research that this is going to pay off. So there are a number of things like that we can offload our dependency on oil.
Thanks. John Goldman is in the chat, and John asks, can we develop infrastructural elements like better train systems and simply drive less?
Sure. That is absolutely true. You have to think, for better or worse, prefer to live very close to where I work. So I think the actual movement of people closer into where they work would be a good thing, but the public transportation system is a major thing that we can do to improve it. It's in cities where there's good public transportation, where everybody thinks of taking subways, rapid bus transit, light rail, things of that nature. This goes a long way to improving the time it takes to get, decreasing the time it takes to and from work, the convenience, all of these things, and certainly decreases our dependency on oil.
Patricia Watts jumped in. She said, yes, high-speed rail systems, please.
Sure. Well, I think of what we have is an opportunity. First, the first route, in my opinion, would be Washington to New York to Boston. There's an Acela line there now. By high speed, we mean the speeds that other countries are putting in. first with the bullet trains in Japan, then the TGV in France, and now the very high-speed rail in China, where the average speeds are being scheduled to be 220 miles an hour. So if you can imagine a 220 mile hour train from New York to Washington, D.C., we're talking about a little over an hour to get there. But it's now center of city to center of city. Wouldn't that be a lovely thing? So you don't even think about, do I take a train? Heck, even 180 miles an hour. an hour and a half would be a staggering improvement.
Sure would. This next question comes from Greer Haseman. Greer asked this on whitehouse.gov in Oak Park, Illinois. I'm worried about the old electric grid. How are we going to upgrade it in time to handle all the demand as we consume more and more power?
Well, that's a good question. The grid is a collection of utilities, regional transmission organizations, things of that nature. And the person is quite right. We need to begin to upgrade the grid. We also need to upgrade it for a variety of other reasons, to manage two-way flows of renewable energy, to actually make it more robust so it's less susceptible to blackouts. And so these are things that are primarily going to be driven by the private investment, because these are privately owned. And the government is doing what it can to coordinate it, to help grease the wheels, to actually make this occur. There's tremendous opportunity both in growing renewable energy and making a much more reliable system. And we have to go forward on that.
Okay, this next question comes from Darren O. Williams on Facebook. Darren asks, wouldn't making use of all viable roof space be a great way to produce energy?
Yes, I think especially the roofs that are flat, you can't see them. You know, the box up things, and you fly into airports, there are warehouses and things like that. Again, what you want to do is you encourage that, but the best encouragement for putting solar generation on roofs, especially flat top roofs, are the cost. And again, we're focused on getting the cost down to make it become automatic. There's other things. You want to be able to think of ways of making it so that when you build a home, the solar panels are integrated into the roof shingles, and that it becomes part of the shingle and becomes part of the architectural look and feel, and that people would be happy with. Those are other things. But these are things that architects, progressive architects, are now looking at solar panels as part of the facade of a commercial building. So there's windows and there's solar panels. And quite frankly, these buildings are going up around the world. And they, at least in my opinion, look quite attractive.
Speaking of solar panels, James D. Sherrill asks, why haven't they put solar panels on the White House?
Oh, they're doing that. It was announced, I think, about 2 months ago that they're putting not only photovoltaic panels, but also hot water panels on the White House.
The next question comes from Eric Sammies, who asks, are we looking to hydrogen as an energy source? And what plans are there to keep energy costs down when electric cars become the mainstay?
Well, there are plans, but you have to understand that hydrogen is a carrier of energy. And you need to figure out where the hydrogen comes from. Right now, we produce hydrogen by reforming natural gas, and we convert natural gas into hydrogen and carbon dioxide. It makes sense to use hydrogen as a fuel for longer distances, but as you convert the natural gas into hydrogen and carbon dioxide, you also need to sequester the carbon dioxide, ultimately because of the climate issues. But remember, it's a source, it's not a source of energy, it's a conversion. And in order to convert it, you have to be comfortable that you can make enough hydrogen, if not from natural gas, from renewable energy in abundance that can be used to create hydrogen out of water and other things. And so that's the issue. We are looking at that. That is certainly a possibility. And looking at as hydrogen for longer distance vehicles and batteries. And we'll see how the technology develops. And we will not only see, we will be investing in that as well.
Okay, if you're just joining us, go to whitehouse.gov/live. There is a live chat that's happening right now on Facebook, where Secretary Chu is answering many of your questions that are coming in. This one comes from Tifa Schmidt. She asks generally, what are we doing to further research?
Well, many things. And so all over the map, we're doing research on improving energy efficiency. Believe it or not, there's a lot of things by considering the entire system, the system being a building or a set of buildings or a city. You can make much better improvements than just by thinking about, let's say, the improvement in heating and ventilation and air conditioning or the improvement in lighting, that you can actually make larger savings, more than a factor of two better savings in energy and money by considering the system. So energy efficiency is a big deal, and we're looking into that and designing research programs to improve that. And then you begin to look at all the forms of energy we use. How can we get wind to be economical and make sense offshore? It means the turbines got to last a lot longer, and they have to be improved, especially the reliability. Photovoltaics I already talked about. Nuclear power can be improved quite a bit. And everything, everywhere along the line, wind, solar, nuclear, other types of, even fossil fuel plants where we can now capture the carbon dioxide and store it, sequestered underground for indeterminate long, long periods of time will make those viable sources of energy as well.
Great. This next question comes from John Paul Salvaggio. John asks, how can the U.S. government push alternate energy systems to help fuel the home, schools, and other public buildings where energy cost is an issue and becoming more available to consumers in the American and international markets? John goes on to give some examples, geothermal energy, rooftop wind turbines, and efficient solar cells.
Sure. I think all those things have a great deal of promise. Let me talk about geothermal. You can talk about geothermal with, you know, essentially large utility scale geothermal, which we are encouraging, pushing, and co-funding. But there's another form of geothermal which also makes a lot of sense, and that is when you build a home or a building, you can actually put plastic pipes that circulate water that go under the ground to 10, 12 feet. And you use the ground as a thermal source. Now, why does this make sense? Suppose you're in the Midwest, and in the Midwest, it can get very bitterly cold, well below freezing, even sometimes below zero. But the ground stays at a certain constant temperature around, let's say, 60 degrees, something of that ilk. So it's better to use an electric pump to transfer the energy at 60 degrees to get it warmed up to whatever you want it to be. So say it's 50 or 60 degrees underground and you want it to be 70 degrees in your home. It's much more efficient to use that to transfer the energy from that source of temperature to a slightly warmer temperature. During the summer, when it gets to be 80, 90, 100 degrees, it's much better to use the ground source as the heat sink, because right now the air conditioners use the outside temperature as one reference temperature, and the inside, let's say again you want it to be, say, 75 degrees. And so that geothermal makes a lot of sense. It begins to pay for itself within several years. And that's something that exists now. There's a technology that exists, and it's not well publicized, but I think that makes a huge amount of sense. So that's one aspect of many types of energy that we can improve on and get the word out that it works.
Great. The next question comes from Kurt Munns in the live Facebook chat. Kurt asks, what piece of the energy pie will be the biggest in the future?
What piece of the energy pie will be the biggest in the future? By that, I assume the person is asking what part of energy generation would be the biggest. Right now in the United States, it's a mix between coal and petroleum. Coal generates about 50% of the electricity, and about 35-36% of the energy is in the form of transportation fuel. We want to decrease those dependencies and transition more to, as I said, electric vehicles, renewable energies. Nuclear power has to be part of the mix. And biofuels, where you convert sunlight into transportation fuel. So all of those things, I think, we see as being a bigger part of the mix. When will this all happen? I think in the next several decades. I think a worthy goal is in the United States to have perhaps 20% of our electricity generated by renewable fuels, and renewable energy rather, by 2020. By 2050, I think, you know, I see potentially half or more of our energy being generated by renewables of various kinds. And then as time goes on further, we get better at this, it becomes cheaper than fossil fuels, which is what we want to do by mid-century, then it flies off on its own.
Okay, if you're just joining us, go to whitehouse.gov/live. There's a live chat happening right now on Facebook. Click the link to join the chat. Oh, we have a question that just came in from Chris Poos, who asks, Dr. Chu, do you believe that one day we can become completely sustainable and get off fossil fuels? If so, when do you think that would be possible?
I think it is going to be possible. I think the hardest thing would be how do you determine what's the backup energy just in case the wind stops blowing, the sun stops shining. And so it's going to be some mixture of longer distance transportation of energy, local storage of energy, and utility scale storage of energy. But certainly there's nothing in the laws of physics to say by, let's say, mid to the end of the century, we can be mostly relying on renewable energy. Just as an example, there are countries in Europe, for example, Ireland believes that by 2020, this is only 10 short years from now, 9 short years from now, it can get to 40% renewable energy by wind. And so there are other countries who have large hydro resources that are already above 50%, but we're talking about where you're not blessed, like Sweden is, with enormous hydroelectric resources, but you have wind and you have. Ireland doesn't have as much sun, but they certainly have a lot of wind. The United States has a lot of sun, a lot of wind, a lot of everything. And so setting goals of 40, 50% by mid-century is, and even earlier, more aggressively, because we're talking some countries, Spain, Germany, Ireland, Great Britain, very aggressive goals in the next 10 years.
The next question comes from Amanda Carey, who asks, should we be worried about China surpassing us in new energy technology?
I think very much so. China has done a dramatic shift in where it's going just in the last several years. And the leadership has openly said that the way the world is going, that the risks of climate change would be devastating to China and the rest of the world. They also see this economic opportunity because the world will be living in a carbon-constrained environment. And so China wants to be the leader in producing those technologies that the world will need. And it's for that reason that they've invested in all the things, starting with energy efficiency. They're building, of the 50 new nuclear reactors being built around the world, China's building 30 of them. Their 2020 goal is to install 100 gigawatts of wind power. That's 4 times more than the United States has today. Starting from nothing, their electricity transmission lines are the highest voltage, lowest loss in the world today. And you just go down the list of things, and they are very serious about developing these technologies, using them in their own country, but also very serious about exporting to the rest of the world. So now, having said all of that, if I ask myself, you know, what can the United States do? The United States still remains the leader of out-of-the-box inventions and innovations and can capture the leads in all those technologies. We built the first nuclear reactor in the world. We discovered silicon photocells. We built the first transmission lines in the world. And it's time for us to recapture those leads.
Jake Haymans chimed in while you were speaking just now, asking, has the U.S. already lost the initiative in creating a sustainable energy industry? Has China, in Europe, beat us?
I don't think you should view things as there's a race, there's a tape, it's the end, you've either lost or won. If you consider what happened, you just go back in history, the United States didn't invent the automobile. That was invented in Germany. But the United States took the lead, beginning with innovations like the assembly line. And for half a century, the United States became the leading automobile manufacturer. Then the technology developments were being developed, let's say, in Europe again and in Asia. And we were no longer the undisputed leader in car technology, but we have an opportunity to get it back and working hard. Airplanes. The United States invented the first airplane, the Wright brothers. Very soon after that, the lead was lost to Europe. And then after that, the United States got it back. And now we're being challenged by Airbus. So leads come and go. So once someone else has a lead, the attitude is don't slump and say, oh, I've lost the race, now what do? Get it back. I mean, this sings right to the heart of a competitive spirit that's part of America. And there's no rule that says we can't. There's no rule that says we can remain the leaders in the areas we're in or capture the lead back in areas which we had in the past, either invented or were the leaders, but it's transitioned away. So these ebbs and flows are something one should expect. But the last thing you want to do is say, nope, we've lost the lead, we've lost the race, the show is over.
Thank you. If you're just joining us, go to whitehouse.gov/live, or you can join a live chat that's happening right now on Facebook. We just got a question from Agnesika Anna Mazur, who asks, is the U.S. attending the upcoming climate change conference, and how will we track the progress of our commitments in Copenhagen?
Well, there was a Copenhagen Accord. First, the answer is yes, we are. I think the United States is moving forward. I think the Recovery Act, the stimulus funding, was a huge down payment in making our economy more efficient and developing new sources of clean energy. But we've got to continue this. And we in the United States should continue, as I said, a major motivating reason, if not the major reason, is that this goes directly to jobs in America and prosperity in America. And not prosperity 20 and 30 years from today, prosperity tomorrow and the day after. Because in the rebuilding of an efficient energy infrastructure that saves money, and because it saves money, it can pay for itself, we need to get going on this.
Thank you. This next question is sort of a follow-up to that. Darlene C. Matthews asks, is there any prediction on the number of jobs by adding wind and solar and other clean energy? Do we know how many jobs that can bring to the U.S.?
That's hard to say. But if you look, it really depends on what is the investment climate, what are the investment opportunities, how serious are the states and the federal government in setting the long-term goals that this is the direction we have to go in order to make ourselves more competitive, in order to diversify our energy supplies. And so it's really hard to say, can I say this is going to be, you know, a million jobs or 100,000 jobs or whatever. Ultimately, this is something that touches every aspect of America. The rebuilding of its infrastructure, the transmission distribution lines, the buildings, the factories, the closing down all antiquated 50, 60-year-old power plants and making them the new ones more efficient and much cleaner. All those things are not only job creators, they're demand creators, and they make us ultimately more competitive because all of a sudden we will be spending less money producing things. We will be wasting less money by throwing away money in inefficient processes or inefficient buildings and homes. And so this could be 130 million homes in the United States, of which 80, 90 million homes could use an energy retrofit. That's a huge, and buildings are similar, huge opportunities both to save money and to create jobs.
So this is a question that came in from Julie Moskal. She asked on whitehouse.gov, we've known about clean energy for decades. Can you give us a believable answer as to why we haven't taken steps in all that time to make our country more energy efficient?
Well, we have taken steps. When President Obama became president, he announced that the goal would be the doubling of renewable energies in 3 years. We're on target to meet that goal. We are moving ahead in many things. We've improved the mileage standards of automobiles. We're ever improving the appliance efficiency, lighting, homes, buildings, all of those things. And so, and we're in the throes of installing not only wind, but solar, geothermal, all of those things. And so we're moving. Do we need to move faster? I'm always thinking, yes, we do, but we are moving. It's not like we're standing still. Again, it's overall, the most important thing is for Americans to realize this is in our best interest, in our best economic interest in the future, to move in this direction.
Thank you. This is going to be our last question. This comes from Grant Smullen in Los Angeles, California. I'm a senior at UCLA, and I want to pursue a career in clean energy when I graduate. What are some of the best avenues to take for young people who want to do this? A number of people have been asking about sort of the career path and what that looks like.
Well, it really depends a lot. First, I applaud you for thinking of doing this, because it is certainly a career that has a very bright future. But it should be decided on your personal likes and dislikes, what you believe are your talents in the various aspects, because the energy problem and challenge could use better policymakers. It could use people who are good economists. It could be used a lot of people, and of course it could use a lot of engineers and scientists. And so it really depends on what your talents are. Now, suppose you're multi-talented and can do anything you want. In that case, go into physics.
Well, thank you for that. One more question, if you don't mind. Lee Purchase, who's in the chat right now, asks, what are the top three initiatives you're focusing on right now?
I would say that it is showing people around the country that saving energy saves money and making that a social norm, as well as we help developing further technologies. That's one initiative. Another initiative is looking at our wide portfolio of things we do in research and development, and innovation, and how do you get into the marketplace. We are looking across the board, how do we get these technologies in a situation where they require less and less subsidy? More and more people say, this makes good financial sense, it's a no-brainer. There don't have to be state incentives and don't have to be federal incentives. At the moment, there have to be. And I think that's necessary, but going into the future, we have to be able to say that wind or solar or other renewables are going to be cheaper than gas, cheaper than coal. And that's the thing we're driving at. And, can it be done 5 and 10 years from today? Maybe. Can it be done 20 years from today? I hope almost certainly.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Secretary Chu, for joining us today. And thank you for everyone that participated in this dialogue on whitehouse.gov and Facebook. For more information on all of the topics that we discussed today, check out whitehouse.gov and energy.gov. And we look forward to seeing you next Tuesday. Thanks.